across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
That would be me on this Thursday, April 11th, 2024, 6 past 7 on this Thursday morning, and we've got Candidate Palooza going on here with a couple of different candidates running for state assembly who are making it official with us this morning. And then we will have Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski in our Women Win Wisconsin segment, which is kind of an OG thing since Sarah was the one that started the segment. Then she had to go do that Secretary of State thing. Then Kristen Lierley was doing it. Now she's got that running for Congress thing. So now it's Motherhood for Good, who will be visiting with Sarah Godlewski as part of our Women Win Wisconsin segment. That's coming up. From Rob over in Tigerton. Good morning from Tigerton. It's partly cloudy and 40. I forgot to say happy birthday to my sister Lori, who turns the big 6-0 yesterday. Well, no wonder, Rob, you just said how old your sister is. I love the Beatles' latest songs of Here Comes the Sun and Let It Be. And we wanna thank Rob for all of his appearances. He won't be with us anymore after his sister takes care of him for generations. She's revving up the car right now. Go stand in the middle of the street. But if Rob joins us tomorrow, that'll be a good thing. Brittany's here now to tell us more about a forecast that I'm looking way ahead. I'm looking past any raindrops and things, and I'm seeing 70s, and that feels good, Brittany.
Oh, doesn't it? Gosh, This weekend is almost here. And like you said, let's just skip today. You know, a little bit of rain, some thunderstorms are possible.
Oh, no way. This is nap weather.
I like
nap weather. I like that. Yeah.
Yes, it is a good rumble of thunder. You can never complain with that. No severe weather is expected, just some heavier downpours. And yeah, a few claps of thunder possible. That's mainly after 2 o'clock this afternoon and into our evening hours. Otherwise, before that, a few scattered showers are possible. And a lot of the rain is going to stay in towards Milwaukee, Kenosha, by Lake Michigan throughout this morning and into the afternoon, because the low pressure system is into the Ohio Valley and moving up towards Michigan and Canada. And as it does so, we're going to see those winds still get a little bit breezy tonight. They will be gusting up to about 30 to 40 miles per hour. And so that means tomorrow will be breezy and cooler. We'll have highs in the low 50s to some upper 40s. But then the warmth sinks in. The winds shift. They pump out of the south. And we get into the 60s for Saturday, 70s for Sunday. And I think some of us will even tap a few 80s there possible into Monday as well. And that's all ahead of another storm system bringing more rain throughout next week. So get outside and enjoy this weekend.
I'm liking the balance here because obviously we were, you know, moisture deficient in the soil. And I just think that, yeah, rather than, you know, one big 7-inch rainfall or something, getting it this way is I think going to be really good news overall for folks.
I agree. I'm excited.
And taking care of the fire danger too.
Oh, seriously. No one wants that wildfire smoke. I cannot forget last year. That was bad. That was really bad.
It was. I got one question before I let you go here. And we were talking about 8-track tapes before. And Michael posts on Facebook, 8-track tapes, he agrees with me, do not deserve a day of their own. They were a horrible technology. I hated that fade out clunking sound and fade back in the middle of a song. Brittany, did you ever have to listen to 8-track tapes?
I sure did.
You did? Okay.
Yes. I know I'm young, but hey, my parents, of course.
Yeah, she's young. Her parents are old. Yes.
I broke it to my grandmother in the late 90s. They didn't make 8-tracks. She was unhappy.
Ooh, yeah. We had a whole lot of 8-tracks. And yeah, they'd be singing a song, and then in the middle of the song, it would go chunk, and then the rest of the song would come back up. Like, what is happening? That was high technology then for 8-track.
It's come so long, right? Isn't that wild?
It is. And so I'm happy where we are now, streaming and everything.
Spotify.
You're right. There you go. Thanks, Brittany. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. We are going to be talking in our second half hour with our friends from Women Win Wisconsin, Motherhood for Good, Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski. A lot to say now that the spring elections are a week and a half in the rearview mirror. Folks are thinking about the fall and thinking about running for seats in the Wisconsin legislature. And there have been a couple of folks in the Chippewa Valley area who have been looking at the new lines, the new districts, have decided that they want to make things official and maybe tell us what they're up to these days. We're going to be talking to Caden Berg in just a second, but first, Christian Phelps is here, I believe. Christian, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good, thanks. Now, folks will say, wait a minute, how do I know that name? Christian's on with us occasionally in our weekly homeroom segment on Wednesday mornings, but now wants to take some of that concern about the community and turn it into something else. So, Christian, tell us about your candidacy.
That's true. So I am a little bit surprised to be here because about a month and a half ago, I would have never thought I would be here in this capacity. But in the intervening time, I've had some conversations with people and taken kind of a hard look at the opportunity, or maybe the better way to put it is responsibility, that we have in the Chippewa Valley to turn fairer legislative maps for our state into actual change, and the kind of change that people have been eager for frankly, my entire adult life, when we've been basically governed in a way that's just like completely oppositional and out of step with the way that people actually live their values in the Chippewa Valley. And in the new legislative maps, the 93rd Assembly District is not the one that I used to live in, but it's one that we have a serious opportunity to kind of turn the page and have a new generation in the driver's seat, and values that actually like put people first, believe in things like, for example, adequately funding public education, but also reproductive freedom and justice along lines of race and class and gender that just like haven't been a reality in Wisconsin lately. And if we don't take this opportunity now, we might not get one for a long time again. So that's kind of why I'm doing this and why I'm excited to do it.
So let's talk about the 93rd district and just the new lines overall, because everybody should take a look and ask their Google machine where they are now. The 93rd district has been represented by Republican Warren Petrick for nigh on a decade now. And it was primarily south of Eau Claire, would be a general way, south and southwest of Eau Claire. What does the new 93rd district look like? What all does it take in?
The new district still includes quite a bit of area south of Eau Claire, in that it includes parts of Eau Claire, Dunn, and Trempealeau counties. So the towns of Osseo, Oliva, Strum, Downsville over in Dunn County are part of the 93rd district, but also a pretty good chunk of the city of Eau Claire. So Eau Claire has now been split kind of in half diagonally. So the southern and western parts of the city of Eau Claire are now included in the 93rd district. The way that gerrymandering works is that if there are population centers that vote in the way that the majority party doesn't really like for the most part, so in Eau Claire's case, a lot of Democratic voters live in the city of Eau Claire. We were all packed into one district so that we could not have more than one representative, essentially. A fairer way to draw the maps, which the governor signed into law a couple of months ago, is to split up those population centers so that they can be more adequately and fairly represented. So I live in the third ward in Eau Claire, right near the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire, and the third ward in Putnam Heights and a lot of the west side of Eau Claire, all the way over to the west side, Menards, are included in the 93rd district now. And we have a real shot at winning.
And by the way, that's somewhat how it used to be before these gerrymandered maps, except that the city of Eau Claire was split kind of north and south. And I had represented the north side. And then there was, other folks, Jeff Smith, doing the south side. So now we're back to no longer packing all of Eau Claire into a single district, which had been represented, the 91st, by Jody Amerson, who will still be running in the new 91st.
And we'll her still be represented by Representative Emerson.
Absolutely.
That's the plan. So.
And we'll talk more to her about that in the coming weeks of the campaign. So, Christian, talk about yourself for a moment. We don't know how this race is going to shape up. So this is your chance for people to find out, what are Christian Phelps's priorities? What are you looking to do for your constituents should you win?
Yeah, I was born in Eau Claire in 1993, and I was actually born in Sacred Heart Hospital. And So I'm 30 years old and was raised by this community. I actually have a correction to make to the public announcement that I put out, which is one in which I call myself a fourth generation Western Wisconsinite. I have a genealogist in the family who actually lives in the district who reached out immediately and texted me and said, "You're actually seventh generation," and gave me all the lineage of the first ancestors of mine that moved to this area way back before I even knew it. So I was raised here, but a lot of things have changed in 30 years. Sacred Heart Hospital abruptly closed earlier this year. When I was becoming an adult, Act 10 was introduced and gerrymandering was put in place. And being raised by a family of educators in this region, I was experiencing a reality in which the only way I knew how to be an adult was under attack. And the institution that I thought was there to protect me and my peers and people like me as a member of the LGBTQ community was being defunded by the people that were supposedly entrusted to do the will of the people. And so I've just basically lived my entire adult life in an Eau Claire that is full of hope and resilience in its population, but has just been disrespected by the state government for the last 15 years. And I think that we have an opportunity right now to kind of put the people who really bring Western Wisconsin to life, the educators and farmers and laborers in every sector who want a modern and safe reality for themselves and their children and the next generations actually into action. But we have to work hard to do it. It's going to be a lot of work. It's going to be a lot of fun. I probably don't know everything, and you probably know things about what I'm going to experience over the next 2 months, Pat, that I don't know yet. But I think we have a real opportunity to make representation more accurate and more fair in the legislature this year.
And do you have an online presence you want people to go to, either a website or a Facebook page?
Yes, Facebook is Christian Phelps for Wisconsin State Assembly, or you can type in Phelps Campaign as the handle, and mm-hmm. the website is coming soon.
All right. Really good. Christian Phelps, new candidate in the 93rd district in the Chippewa Valley. Christian, thanks so much. Good luck to you. We'll
yeah,
talk thanks. Again soon.
Good All to right. see you so early in the morning.
Exactly. We'll do it again sometime soon here. Coming up in just a bit, we're going to talk to another candidate from the Chippewa Valley who's getting into a race and what looks like is going to be a race with a Democratic primary. Certainly not the only case where that's going to happen, as a lot of people see these new maps and feel like this is their opportunity to serve the public. So more with Caden Berg coming up in just a sec. First, a reminder that wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Thursday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Talk more about people running for office in just a sec. Temperatures at the 7 a.m. hour around Wisconsin include 39 degrees here on Lake Wasota, 29 in Hayward, 32 in Park Falls, Wausau's at 43, Green Bay 49, La Crosse 45, Wisconsin Rapids reporting 43 degrees right now, 45 in Oshkosh, 43 in Madison, 45 where Greg is down in Waukesha. The Courier Newsroom podcast Vibes Only is out for a new week with Brian Derrick and Glennis Mahar. Their guest this week is Taylor Lorenz. She covers technology and social media for the Washington Post. Topics include the proposed TikTok legislation, how social media shapes the vibes of politics, and Trump's quote-unquote new statement on his position on abortion. Go to couriernewsroom.com for more, or wherever you get your podcasts, search for Vibes Only. And to get our daily newsletter from Up North News, head over to upnorthnewswi.com. In today's newsletter, Christina Lurie talks about how lead pipes are still poisoning Wisconsin children. There's still a lot of work to do, but also a happy reminder that the Dane County Farmers Market returns to the Capitol Square in Madison this Saturday from 6:15 to 1:45. And if you've never been to the farmers market there surrounding the state capitol, it's really worth your while. If you get a chance to get to that part of the state and see it sometime, you'll appreciate very much the variety and all the people watching that you get to do there. All right, let's get back to talking about candidates who are going to be running four seats in the legislature this November. And we mentioned the 93rd district that Christian Phelps just talked about, the 91st, where the incumbent Democrat Jody Emerson will be running again. And then also somewhere in there in the Chippewa Valley area is the new 92nd district. And for that, we bring in candidate Caden Berg. Caden, good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Hey, so welcome to the race here. You, you've served on the Chippewa County Board. Tell us more about your own background and decision to get into the race.
Yeah, so really my decision stems from over, I would almost say 2 years ago when I first ran for the county board. You know, back then I was in, you know, college. It was 2022. You know, we're just slowly getting over the, you know, the pandemic hump. And, you know, when I first ran for county board, it was with the same idea. I wanted to serve the people. I wanted to do it well, and I wanted to learn most of all what the issues are and how to best address and solve them. So when I saw the, when I was given the opportunity to run for the 92nd, you know, I looked into it, I talked to people, and it was, you know, it was months of decision making, and, you know, that's where I got to, really. So, yeah. And,
I was just trying to pull up a map of the district and then have you describe it, because this one is, to me, it looks a little odd. You know, it's like basically it's this kind of narrow rectangle that kind of stretches kind of along Highway 29, more or less. You describe the new 92nd.
Yep. So the new 92nd district, and you're absolutely right, is like a, you know, very stretched out rectangle. It goes all the way from, the east side of Triple Falls, that Lafayette area, and it goes all the way west to Menominee. So it's just that long strip of land. So the major population centers there would be Triple Falls, Elk Mound in the middle, then Menominee. So, you know, working class towns. And I'm proud to run and hopefully, you know, represent them.
I was looking at how it affected Chippewa Falls as well as Eau Claire. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, while this one is kind of this narrow rectangle, you know, in that Chippewa Falls Menominee area, where I'm sitting is now the new 68th. And so for those of us just north of Chippewa Falls, we are at the very southern end of the new 68th, which goes all the way into like nearly all of Taylor, Price, Rusk counties. So it's an entirely different beast than what it used to be to represent this area. When you look at the issues that are important in your area, the 92nd district, what are those issues that you think voters are going to be weighing this year?
Of course. Well, obviously, you know, like my, you know, campaign has originally stated from the beginning, it's all about, you know, working class and middle class, you know, values, and how we can, you know, fix and address these issues. You know, it's making healthcare more affordable, making sure our public schools are funded and not, you know, crumbling. It's also about, you know, I come from a union family. I'm really proud of that. And so a big part of my campaign will be like advocating for union rights. I do believe we should repeal Act 10 because, you know, that greatly affected our state. And I believe that, you know, affected wages across all of Wisconsin. So really it's these kind of, you know, bread and butter issues, and also childcare resources and affordability is another huge issue around here.
Now, folks that regularly listen to the show will hearken back exactly 1 week ago when we talked to former state representative Joe Plouffe, who also made his announcement for this same 92nd district. I fully expect that with these new maps, there are going to be multiple instances of primaries, both Democratic and Republican, and that, you know, primaries themselves are not a bad thing. They let people hear about the candidates. We have an excellent field of candidates in the 3rd congressional district, for example, including State Representative Katrina Shanklin and candidate Rebecca Cook. And so, talk to me about how a Democratic primary is going to impact you. You know, what are you going to tell folks that would make you the better choice on August 13th in order to run on November 5th?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. With the Democratic primary, I believe it does present a great opportunity for us to find who is the strongest candidate in a pretty much 50-50 split district. So, you know, there's some other districts around here that are luckier in terms of, you know, population wise of like how many Democrat and Republican voters there are. But I almost like this because when I first ran for county board, my district is split, was pretty much split 50-50. So, you know, this 92nd district, you know, very much larger than a county board district, presents me the same opportunity to like listen to the voters. What are the issues? And, you know, it's, I believe what will occur on August 13th, well, people will choose the candidate who has the energy, the motivation, and also just the thought process and, you know, the willingness to listen, I believe is a big, big part of it.
Do you feel like the environment of Wisconsin voters, especially in your area, after, you know, 12 years of Republican dominance in the legislature, you know, the rural areas that you and I have lived in, worked in, campaigned in, have traditionally been Republican for the last, you know, 10 to 20 years or so. How do you feel like you're going to do in those rural areas talking to voters who maybe consider themselves conservatives or Republicans, but not necessarily fans of Donald Trump?
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, I originally lived in the 67th district before the maps changed, obviously. So I grew up, I think, almost my entire life under a, you know, Republican-controlled assembly, or at least a good chunk of it. And I see, you know, there's definitely a, there is, you know, that, you know, how do we communicate? And it's going to be about communicating well, and definitely communicating about my priorities is going to be a big issue. And also listening to their priorities, like, what are they finding that is, you know, making their lives harder? And I believe a lot of my priorities fit into their lists, you know, healthcare costs, you know, in rural areas is skyrocketing because we're losing our rural hospitals. So
yeah, as we've certainly seen here. Really quick, website or a Facebook page?
Yes, of course, bergforassembly.com. And you can also find me on Facebook also at Berg for Assembly. Girls, we run this mother.
All right, it's time for our Thursday edition of Women Win Wisconsin, and we've got the OG edition today as we bring back the originator of this segment. Lo, these many moons ago, Wisconsin Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski, but also the new hosts of Women Win Wisconsin, as Dr. Lyerly becomes Candidate Lyerly, our friends from Motherhood for Good are coming over here. And I was trying to think, how do I say all of this to Kate Duffy and Nicole Slavin? Do we say it's like Women Win Wisconsin, hosted by Motherhood for Good, presented by? And I thought, no, go with the whole sports thing. So welcome to Women Win Wisconsin, powered by Motherhood for Good. So Kate, Nicole, good morning. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Good. Nicole, long time no see. How have you been?
Yeah, I'm doing wonderful. Super excited to be back.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. This whole business got started with Sarah Godlewski and, you know, helping, you know, clear a path so that more women around the state who are leaders in their community could have their voices elevated, their profile raised, and maybe if they run for office someday, you know, they won't be starting from zero. Since that time, Sarah kind of had to move on to these new Secretary of State duties. Sarah, we talked to you about that, a week or two ago. How's it feel to have your campaign hat back on and revisit Women Win Wisconsin?
Well, it is great to be back and especially be focusing on how important it is to elevate women. I mean, one of the reasons it was so great that, Pat, we worked together to start this segment was because we know if women aren't at the table, they're on the menu. And we see it every day here in Wisconsin, whether it is continuing the attack on reproductive rights to we still don't have paid family leave or affordable childcare to other states like Minnesota or Michigan or Illinois. And so, and then when you look at who's at the table, you know, less than 32% here in the legislature is comprised of women, even though we're 51% of the population. So that's a driver.
It is. This next question is not fair to Kate because she's due any day now, or to Nicole because she's freshly back onto the segment. So, Sarah, I'm going to put this on you. That the Arizona Supreme Court and reaffirming an abortion ban from, I wish I was joking, but I'm not, 1864. That is a ruling in Arizona that I'm going to bet you say doesn't just cause ripples in Wisconsin, but I mean is really churning the waters all over again.
Yeah. When I woke up or saw the Supreme Court ruling in Arizona, it was just bringing me back to the first time when I heard that Wisconsin was going to start following their 1849 abortion ban. You know, a time that was before the Civil War, before women had the right to vote. And here is Arizona doing the exact same thing. And this is why races also are important to like the consequences. You know, thank goodness Arizona has a Democratic woman attorney general who has said she's not going to enforce that. She does not believe that's the interpretation. And they are, you know, everybody's scrambling. Doctors are worried about what this means. Women, you know, I can't imagine being in your situation and knowing what doctors are thinking, because we were hearing stories. You know, I think about a story in Eau Claire, my hometown, where a woman went septic and she's sitting there in the ER. This was literally like a week after the ruling in Wisconsin. And they are deciding if she could make it to Minnesota in time, because doctors don't know what that means.
No, because you had a law, as we discussed in the last hour, you know, written by a bunch of, you know, white men before, you know, other groups had the opportunity to vote. So, Kate, from a Motherhood for Good standpoint, I don't know who what the equivalent groups are in Arizona, but I'm sure they, like you, are going to be seeing, you know, more people saying, how do I get involved in talking to my neighbors about this issue?
Yes, there is actually a group on Instagram called Moms for Arizona, and she's been really great about getting quick content out about this, what it means, what people can do, and also pointing to other groups who are on the ground kind of doing the work there. You know, we've seen this happen time and time again, and also we've seen what happens at the ballot box when Republicans do this. So that's like, gives us a little bit of hope that people will get involved and fight for this, but people need to know where to get information. So hopefully that is a good starting point. And yeah, seeing this news just does bring up so many things for us. You know, my first thought is like, thank God we had the outcome we did with our Supreme Court race last spring, and how important those state Supreme Court elections are. And like Secretary Gadlewski mentioned, thank God they have a Democratic Secretary of State. Those elections are so important too. And so it just really ties into everything we're talking about being informed and engaged in races up and down the ballot, because the stuff is all connected. And it's gonna like play out in other states as well. Obviously, as we've seen, this doesn't stop at Texas or Florida or Arizona. It's all the same playbook.
Arizona was in play anyway because of the presidential race and a U.S. Senate race.
Yep.
Now, abortion rights will probably be a ballot question in November, and two of the state Supreme Court justices who ruled on this will be up in November as well. But to bring it back to Wisconsin, Nicole, not just from an activist standpoint, but a candidate standpoint. We've been talking about candidates. We've watched people become candidates right here on the show. But that's surely not the case in every assembly district, every state Senate district. So, you know, you and others certainly feel that there's a role yet in recruiting people to be candidates or getting people motivated. Just because they're hearing this candidate announcements now doesn't mean it's too late. Right, Nicole?
Absolutely. Absolutely correct. And I think a big piece of it is whether, you know, it's the abortion issue or anything else. All of these things affect us, women especially. We've seen rights slowly start to slip away. And that is when people turn up to vote. And so what I would encourage is, yes, I do believe June 1st is the deadline to file. We can verify that. But encourage everybody to look and see, you know, is someone running in your district? What would it take? Is it you? Is it someone else you know? But just getting involved and learning more about what's happening. Your local connections, your local candidacies, those are the things that are going to make the biggest impact. And collectively, the more we have that happening, then we'll continue to see this progressive wave that we've seen in Wisconsin that's been just so encouraging to see more and more people showing up and speaking their mind and, you know, showing up on election day.
And Sarah, I don't mean to put you in an awkward spot, but when we just talked to a candidate who is the second Democrat to announce in their particular legislative district, so folks hearing this, folks seeing this and thinking, well, there's already a candidate, but if they feel like, you know, they still have something to offer, and you having come out of a U.S. Senate primary, while it's an extra burden for a party, you know, primaries exist for a reason, and you know, the experience overall, I would like to think, is still a healthy thing, you know, when a primary election, when a primary field, you know, stays above board and sticks to the issues and things like that.
I would absolutely encourage anyone who wants to run, even if there's somebody that has already declared to run, especially what we often see is that men jump in, women need to think about it. And then when they're encouraged, they're like, I don't want to, because I don't want to run against somebody. But running in these races, even in primaries, you have an opportunity to elevate issues. You know, when I think about my race for the U.S. Senate, I was the first to talk about reproductive rights. This is before Roe was even on, you know, the radar screen with what was going to happen. And it was because I was sick of it being treated like an afterthought. You know, we had times when Congress were all Democrats. We had a Democratic president where we could have made Roe v. Wade the law of the land, but we failed to prioritize it. And so I think this is also a really important opportunity to elevate issues so we can bring mainstream, so they're not these political footballs. They're the mainstream things that we struggle with every single day, whether it's trying to raise families or equal pay. You know, it all affects all of us, too, at the end of the day.
Kate, as you talk to folks at the national level, you've been to D.C. a couple of times talking about, you know, motherhood for good. We've talked about the activists. We've talked about potential candidates. For the voters themselves, I think people clearly hear from you and from the rest of us that we feel there's value in the political process. Mm-hmm. But we have to acknowledge that I'm sure there are voters out there going, I wish we weren't such a swing state. All we ever hear is it's the most important election, and they're tired, and there's temptation to tune out. So, Kate, how do you explain to folks without constantly saying, you know, the world's on fire, but how do you keep them motivated to embrace civic engagement and not tune it all out this year?
I actually love this question, because I will say first, your exhaustion is totally real and totally valid. Sometimes we talk about the exhausted majority with the political process, and it is definitely a real thing, especially in Wisconsin. However, on the flip side, I will say I'm connected to people, yes, in DC and with other groups like ours in different states all over the country. And they, like people in like Oregon or Iowa or Nebraska or Kentucky even, are jealous of what happens in Wisconsin, because they're still doing everything they can and working on more like school board stuff. But they're like, we wish that what we were doing had as big of an impact, and we wish that we could swing our state. And so I would say it is exhausting, but it's also a privilege to live in a state that has that much swing and that much impact. And it's just a really, really big opportunity for us to get involved and stay involved.
Nicole, the same kind of point to you, as far as, you know, the people that you, especially moms, you know, who are busy, but I have to think that the number is changing rapidly of those who like, oh, I'm too busy, I can't bother to, yeah, I better find out more about this. And, you know, I'm sure people reach out to you that way.
Absolutely. And to just build off of what Kate said, she's totally correct. But I would argue that moms are the group that is best able to handle this, right? We're always juggling everything. Everything's always a fire drill. And what's your other option? You just don't, you opt out? Well, that's not acceptable. We're not going to opt out of all these important issues that affect ourselves and our families and our communities. So no, we're just going to keep doing this. It's, you know, it's happening. We're showing up, and we're going to keep showing up.
And so, Sarah, you know, you have your official duties as Secretary of State, but then you also get to put on, you know, your campaign hat no differently than when, you know, the president or the vice president come here. I know are already doing things with Dr. Lyerly up there in the 8th Congressional District, and it's Congressional District Convention season. Like the 7th Congressional District Democrats, I know, are meeting in Rhinelander this weekend. So you're probably putting some miles on the car.
Yes, I'm gonna be at the 3rd congressional district speaking on Sunday. And look, I think what we are talking about at these congressional conventions is what's at stake, because as we just talked about, Pat, we know that it can be exhausting. But when you look what's at the ballot, it is a real motivator. It's, you know, we know reproductive rights is front and center, but it's even things like, I mean, when Trump was in office, he appointed an oil lobbyist who denied global warming to run the Environmental Protection Agency. You know, I mean, we know global warming and protecting our environment is very important and top of mind for so many people, to the work that was, you know, done with his tax cuts. And so in shipping jobs overseas, when we've done such a good job under the Biden administration to bring jobs back to places like Wisconsin and, you know, really tout our like Made in America, Made in Wisconsin credentials that Democrats have been pushing for. So it's exciting to remind and just share what's really at stake this November.
And Sarah has been relentless in banging the drum on, you know, protecting democracy, everything from a member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission who was a fake Trump elector to, you know, what we had in our last hour, Senator Van Wongard continuing to spew or cast doubt on the 2020 election by saying there were shenanigans without being able to say exactly what they are. And folks like Sarah are holding people's feet to the fire and keeping them accountable. Sarah, thanks so much for helping hand off Women Win Wisconsin to our friends from Motherhood for Good.
Well, I'm excited Kate and Nicole will be leading the charge, and thanks for continuing to cover all the great women and what they're doing across the state.
Oh, they most certainly will. Nicole, Kate, thank you so much. It's going to be a great little weekly visit here now.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
All right.
Thank you so much.
All of you have a great day. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Luke Mathers, do a little recap of last night's Top Chef Wisconsin. After this, you're up north. Luke Mathers is here, who often on Thursdays helps tell us what else to listen for across the Civic Media Radio Network. But since he is also a future Top Chef, what, sampler? Is that what you're going to be one of these days?
That's what we landed on last week. So
Why? Because are you afraid to say the word chef-testant around Greg because he loves that word so much? Is that what it is?
I'm not afraid to say the word. I'm okay. Just not, I don't have the chops to be a chef testant.
Oh, okay. So a sampler would work out well
yes.
for you.
Yes.
By the way, the samplers, the guest judges on last night's show were people that I had never heard of them, but boy, did they, you know, what the common word today is fangirl. Did they fangirl over two of the celebrity chefs who joined them this week? I'd never heard of them. Maybe you had as a regular viewer of the show, Dominique Crenn and Buddha Low.
Yes. So Buddha won the last two seasons. So he won season 19 of Top Chef, and then he was invited back for season 20 was Top Chef.
World All-Star.
Yes.
Yes.
And so Buddha, as a winner for season 19, got that invite for season 20, and then he just continued to run right through the competition. So he was back-to-back champ. And then Dominique Wren is a 3-star Michelin chef, which, Pat, is essentially like LeBron James equivalency yes. in the food world. So like that's the type of gravitas that she brought to the judging table.
So they started the episode. This was episode 4. So there were 12 left of the original 15. And then they announced that they were going to actually have a double elimination and cut two of them and get down to their final 10. And so to do that, they paired everybody up into teams. Well, they let themselves pair up with each other. And how awkward was that? That's like, you know, like me and Greg sitting on the bench waiting to be picked for the kickball team. And we're waiting and we're waiting. And these guys are awkwardly going, oh, you
speak
want to
yourself, Kreitlow. I've got a thigh that can crush a ball across the state.
I would pick Greg pretty early. I feel like he could kick the kickball very far.
You know, Greg's just not committing to the bit here on the awkwardness of picking teams together.
Well, so I don't get to talk. I barely get to talk during this segment, so I got to take it when I can get it.
You could feel it, though, as they were given the opportunity to partner up. It's one of those things where typically when you're given free reign like that, you know there's a twist coming. And then immediately after the pairing up was when they announced it was going to be a double elimination. So it was like, essentially, hope you chose wisely, because it's going to be you and that person responsible for the dishes that you're going to be creating. And if you do a bad job, you're going to be going home.
And it was pretty clear from the beginning that there were a couple of awkward teams, but the team of Kalina and Alicia looked awkward from the start, where they weren't gelling. They weren't clicking. And you'd think that in a world-class cooking competition, and neither one of you are slouches, you are big-time chefs in your own communities, and yet it was weird that they could not get it together.
Yeah, it was not a good pairing. It seemed like they were two of the individuals that kind of got left just, okay, we'll pick each other. But when on double elimination episodes like last night's, there's usually one of two things that will happen when you see all of the focus and the drama land on one pair. Either they're going to have the best dish and come out on the other side of that adversity with a killer meal and be able to win or be close to winning, or they're at most definitely going home. And yeah, that was one of those two paths was what was chosen last night.
It was, especially as, and I would certainly put it more on Kalina, who was basically just trying to do her own thing and almost treating Alicia like an assistant. Alicia, on the other hand, could have
Alicia
tried
waited
to step
too
up
long.
More.
Yeah, yep. She came
she
out.
She was too
and
she deferential.
Said, yep. She was like, "Hey, the chef in me is about to come out." And Kelsey and I, while we were watching, was like, "It's Top Chef. The chef in you should have been out already." Like,
should have been out a long time ago.
Yeah.
And so the dish that they let me get to the theme. The theme was all about Frank Lloyd Wright, which led to, again, the show does beautiful photography as they went from the Burnham Block in Milwaukee to Monona Terrace in Madison, out to Taliesin in Spring Green. And the word of the week was duality. You know, Frank Lloyd Wright has a lot of duality in his architecture, so they wanted to see things that were somewhat similar but very different all at the same time. Again, we never get too deep into what all they prepare because I can't pronounce half the ingredients. All I will say is that the winning team, which was Danny and Rassica, they had your typical, what I would call on these things, the teeny tiny food, where if you were served it in a restaurant, you'd be like, what is this?
It was a fine dining plate for each of them.
A couple of teeny tiny things, but clearly delicious things because the judges rewarded them, gave them the winner. Rassica was the overall winner, and then Kalina and Alicia were sent home. Again, not a surprise that, you know, teamwork makes the dream work, kids.
Yeah, when you see two people struggling to be able to get on the same page for a team challenge, usually it's not going to do well for them. But there is still Last Chance Kitchen. So there definitely is an opportunity for all five of the eliminated chefs so far to make it back into the competition. It's kind of one of those side competitions that's going on while the main one's going on. And in years past, they've had two different people come back in at different points of the season. So typically, Pat, when there's a double elimination, it means that somebody's coming back from Last Chance Kitchen right around the corner. So we may be getting the addition of another one of the chef testants back into the competition shortly. But I'm really looking forward to next week because they packed their bags to go to Spring Green and Taliesin for the Frank Lloyd Wright Challenge. But next week, it's supper clubs and the Dane County Farmers Market.
Yeah, I heard both of those things. I'm like, okay, I'm in. And I'm thinking, because again, I feel so bad that, you know, we're just holding Greg back. There's so much he wants to say. Maybe he could be our Last Chance Kitchen contestant. And he just reports on that end of the competition.
Do you know what I know what I'm thinking about when you guys are talking? This is what's going through this is what's going through my head.
So in other words, Greg will not be reviewing Last Chance Kitchen for us. We'll just have to take care of that on our own.
My biggest fear is that I watch 40 seconds of this show, and then I'm going to be like, you guys,
It's addictive, man. I'll tell you, watch the first season of Top Chef. It's easy to get through. I think there were only like 8 or 10 contestants that year. Like, it was a very brief season when it first started, and it's, you kind of fall in love right away. Like, it's great. Great.
There you go, Greg. Prepare to fall in love. Thank you, Mr. Mathers. Talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
All right. And Greg, we'll see you with Matt and Aaron Air coming up at 10 o'clock in the morning. All right. Thanks for being here today. Up North News is the Wisconsin digital outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network, building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Find us at upnorthnewswi.com. Follow us on social media. Get signed up for that newsletter. And thanks for joining us on the lake on this Thursday morning. We'll wrap things up tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. See you then.